Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, it is Veterans Day. And how appropriate that this week brings the final Flag City Honor Flight mission of the year. Planning for 2025 is now underway. We'll speak with President Steve Schultz. Also this morning, the Western U.S. already digging out from their first big snowstorm of the season. How long before the wintry weather reaches us? And how much of it will we see this season? The Old Farmer's Almanac offers their prediction. And it's an unwelcome fact of life. The cold, dry winter weather can accelerate the process. New research shows when, how, and what triggers the aging of our skin. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, November 11th, 2024. Just 50 days left in the year. We've reached that 50-day mark of days left in 2024. By the way, for Veterans Day today, the National Veterans Memorial and Museum in Columbus hosting a Veterans Day ceremony. That'll be this morning beginning at 11 o'clock. OSU President and U.S. Navy veteran Ted Carter will be the keynote speaker for the event. I did not realize that the OSU President was a Navy vet, but he will be the keynote. If you cannot attend in person, you can stream the ceremony by clicking on a YouTube link posted at nationalvmm.org for the National Veterans Memorial and Museum, nationalvmm.org. And by the way, if you've never been to the National Veterans Memorial and Museum in Columbus, admission is always free for veterans, active duty military members, and Gold Star families. So worth checking out. So happy Veterans Day to you this morning. I don't know about you. I had a long weekend. It was tough to drag myself out of bed, drag my sorry self out of bed this morning. But here we are, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, as far as you know, getting ready to kick off a new week. Did you happen to see this? Some sad news. I found this out over the weekend. The man who was famous for voicing You've Got Mail on America Online has passed away. We all know that, right? I mean, in the early days of the internet, when everybody was on AOL, we would hear that every day, maybe several times a day. You've Got Mail. 74-year-old Elwood Edwards passed away last week at his home in North Carolina. His daughter tells the New York Times that he passed away from complications from a stroke. Back in 1989, he was hired by Quantum Computer Services, which later became AOL. They asked him to record several alerts for their fledgling online service, including, "Welcome, you've got mail." And then, remember when you signed off, you would say, "Goodbye." And I don't remember what the other... Oh, files done. That was the other one. You were downloading something. You got an alert because it took a long time to download a file back in those days. So you needed an alert to tell you. So those were the four phrases that he recorded for AOL, and they paid him $200. And it became kind of an iconic thing. The you've got mail. Those three words made him internationally famous, passed away last week. Elwood Edwards. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Now, this is kind of an interesting medical story. I know that COVID is not necessarily something that we worry about all that much these days. We're well past the pandemic and all of that, but a new review suggests that more than 20% of Americans may suffer from long COVID. Long COVID. That's the after effects of a COVID infection. Things like chronic fatigue and chronic cough, brain fog, that kind of thing. Researchers used an AI tool to sift through the electronic health records of Americans looking for signs of long COVID, including those symptoms. Previously, the estimate had been like 7% of the population suffered from long COVID. Previous studies had pegged the number at 7%, but now this review says it may be more than 1 in 5 Americans, so more than 20%. That's a big difference. Questions about the true burden of long COVID have thus far remained elusive, but now seem more within reach, according to Hossein Estiri of Mass General Brigham Hospital in Boston. Physicians are often faced with having to wade through a tangled web of symptoms and medical histories, and having this tool powered by AI that can methodically do it for them could be a game changer. So, kind of interesting, they're using AI to analyze this this data point. Wow, 1 in 5 Americans suffering some form of long COVID. I have a bit of a brain fog this morning and a little fatigued, but it's just because I didn't get a whole lot of sleep over the weekend. It was just a long weekend. That is not... I'm pretty sure it's not, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is long COVID. I have no idea. I guess I should ask Google and find out, apparently. Let's see. So last week's election, you've had several days now to sort of digest what happened on Tuesday. And probably no big surprise that the day after the polls closed, so last Wednesday, Google says searches for move to Canada were up 1,270% the day after the election. Here it comes. Everybody who is unhappy about the election say, oh, I'm moving to Canada. Sure you are. 1,270% increase in the search term move to Canada. So this is kind of interesting. If you don't want to go to Canada, maybe you can go to Australia or New Zealand. Searches for those relocation destinations were up 800% and 2,000% respectively. The other top places that Americans may be looking to relocate include Ireland and the UK. According to Evan Green of Canadian immigration law firm Green and Spiegel, quote, the majority of Americans voted for Donald Trump, but some people don't necessarily feel comfortable living in that kind of society. People are afraid they are going to lose their freedoms, he says. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think you're ever going to lose the freedom to leave, you know? If you ain't happy, go. Ain't nobody stopping you. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And lastly, here among the first things, but I mean, everybody says that. I mean, it seems like after every election, a certain segment of the population says, that's it, I'm moving to Canada. Or I'm moving to wherever. I guess New Zealand might be a bit extreme. I'm going to move halfway around the world. Does anybody know anyone who ever has done that? I mean, come on. Everybody says that, and sometimes famous people say that. Nobody ever does. That's. Sometimes I wish some people would, but that's a whole different thing. So the countdown is on. We mentioned 50 days until the end of 2024. Final 50 days of the year, and just under 20 days, what is it, 19 days? 19, 20 days until Thanksgiving. I haven't done the whole thing. It's less than 3 weeks until Thanksgiving. And now is the time to secure airfare deals for flights, both domestic and internationally. Whether you're planning a getaway for Turkey Day or trying to plan ahead for Christmas, this travel expert's tips will help guide anyone looking for a little escape this holiday season. The good news is that there are a lot of deals this year, especially internationally. This according to Brian Kelly, the CEO and founder of the Points Guy, thepointsguy.com. He says it is probably going to be the busiest holiday travel season ever. We were up 9% going into the month of November, and since the election, we've seen a huge spike in interest. Again, maybe it's those people who are looking to move out of the country as a result of the election. I don't know. But for those who are traveling during Thanksgiving week, Mr. Kelly says Wednesday through Sunday will be the most expensive time to travel. So you have to learn how to hunt for the good deals. And he recommends utilizing tools like Google Flights that can track your itinerary. And when there are price fluctuations, they can alert you. You don't actually book through Google Flights, but it'll search all of the different airlines for the best deal. And now they have Southwest Airlines included in the results, which were notably absent in the past. So, again, you don't book the flights there, but they can find you the best fares. Google also analyzed the top searched destinations for Thanksgiving 2024. Not everybody is going to go visit family for Thanksgiving. Some people are just going to take a getaway and give thanks for being able to get away from family, apparently. Orlando, Cancun, New York, Tokyo, and London are the top five spots to travel to for Thanksgiving. So I would imagine those will be the toughest flights to get and maybe the most expensive if they're the most popular. But there you go, what you need to know with Thanksgiving now just a couple, 3 weeks away. Okay. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly sunny and windy today with a high in the upper 50s. Partly cloudy tonight, low in the mid-30s. A Tiffin Police Department K-9 officer will be more protected thanks to a generous donation from an organization founded by an 8-year-old boy who feels that K-9 officers deserve body armor just like their human partners. Since its inception in 2018, Brady's K-9 Fund has raised more than $1.2 million and vested more than 950 canines across all 50 states. The organization says it's dedicated to providing essential equipment and resources to canines, ensuring they are well-equipped and protected for their entire shift. See a picture of Tiffin Police Department K-9 Leo in his new protective vest in this story on our website. This year, there have been 17 fatalities on the Ohio Turnpike, making it the deadliest year in the past two decades.
Distracted driving up 183%. Volume 21.4%. Commercial traffic now makes up 27.4% of all the vehicles on the turnpike.
WTOL 11's Brian Duggar investigating. State leaders gathered in Columbus to discuss important Ohio issues, and child care was one of the biggest topics.
The availability of child care is a primary concern that Ohio lawmakers will have to face as the Buckeye State prepares for unprecedented growth. While it is agreed that this is an issue, how to fix it and increase accessibility is a matter for debate. A modest 2025 state budget may hinder the change.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Broadway theaters will be honoring Finley native and Tony Award-winning actor Gavin Creel, who passed away in September. According to Playbill, each Broadway theater will dim their lights in Creel's honor on December 3rd. Playbill is reporting that Creel was originally set to receive a partial dimming ceremony, but after an immense outcry online, the Broadway League decided that Creel would receive a full dimming. A public memorial will be held for Creel on December 2nd at Broadway's St. James Theater at 4 p.m. Gavin Creel was a 1994 graduate of Finley High School. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
So on this Veterans Day week, brings the final mission of the year for Flag City Honor Flight. President Steve Schultz is with us on the line this morning. And Steve, was that a happy coincidence, or was it actually planned to have the final Flag City Honor Flight mission of the year this week of Veterans Day?
Well, it actually, Chris, was a little bit more of a coincidence, because our normal time would have been last Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And but the board kind of decided we'd rather have everybody be able to vote than be on the plane.
Yeah.
And so we moved it a week. And so it's actually pretty neat that it ended up being the day after a Veterans Day.
Yeah. So this is the last, as we've mentioned, of four trips this year. And already the planning is underway for 2025, I understand.
Yeah, the planning's underway. We are planning again on taking four flights next year. We're trying to actually go into Washington, D.C., into DCA, which is Reagan Airport, next year. It's obviously a lot more convenient. It would save us about 2.5 hours of being on a bus going back and forth from Baltimore. So it's a little more expensive, but we're seeing what we can do, and hopefully we can make that work out. Right now, we're in the process of getting with the Army. As I believe you know, we have to get special reserve times at the changing of the guard.
Yeah.
And we have to go through the Army to do that. So we have to wait until we get that finalized before we can finalize dates for everybody.
You know, that's a part of this that I don't know that we've ever really talked about. I mean, we've talked about all the planning that goes into it in terms of fundraising and, you know, making sure that you have the funds to do the trips. And we've talked about mm-hmm. the selection process and, you know, veterans applying to be on an honor flight and the process that goes on in that respect. But there is an sure. awful lot of planning that goes on behind the scenes logistically in order to make these flights happen at all.
Oh, yeah. There's hundreds of hours that go into any of these flights. Again, just the time it takes to get through with the Army. We have to go through the National Park Service to be able to get a tent for our table tents and chairs at the it's actually at the Henry Bacon Ball Field, which is right next to the Vietnam Memorial. That takes a lot of time. You know, we have to arrange all the food, all the buses when we're there. Now, National Honor Flight in Washington helps us a lot with the buses and things like that. But otherwise, you know, we're on the hook for getting all that done. You know, Bliss Bus has always been fabulous with us in the Findlay area there. They've always donated their bus to get the veterans up to the hangar in Toledo and back free of charge. You know, Heart Medical provides all our wheelchairs free of charge that we take, you know, with us. So, yeah, there's tons of logistics that go into this trip.
That's really fascinating, too. Not just the logistics here locally on this end to get the veterans and their guardians up to the hangar for the flight and then back home afterwards. But again, once you actually are in D.C., a lot of phone calls, I would imagine, going back and forth, a lot of phone calls and emails to make sure that everything is just right for that day's trip.
Yeah, and especially that day, it's kind of interesting. As soon as we land at Baltimore, we are getting calls from Bob Latta's office and the National Park Police, et cetera, and the news media in Washington saying, you know, what time are you going to be here, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, and sometimes it's a little difficult because we're not really sure what the traffic's going to be like from Baltimore down. But, yeah, there's just a ton of phone calls and, again, a ton of logistics that go into the whole trip, the whole day. Now, you know, we have it planned out pretty well. But as I mentioned at our Guardian training yesterday, you know, that's all tentative. Things can change,
yeah.
And we are pretty good at adapting on the fly as we go. So,
what is that that they say about best laid plans? You would think that by this time, everything would be kind of a well-oiled machine as many times as you've done it. But I would imagine every trip presents its own unique challenges, just given the circumstances.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the issue becomes, you know, is the plane running behind? We've
sure.
had problems when we get to Baltimore where the bus, you know, one of the lifts is bad. So we have to, you know, move people around buses so that we can get people on buses that have lifts to get
yeah.
them up. It just takes extra time. But again, we build some fluff into the schedule so we can adjust as we go.
So talk a little bit about this trip that'll be happening tomorrow. Again, this is a big day, a very busy day for the veterans who are taking this trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually our 29th mission, And the neat thing about this mission is on this flight, we will be taking our 2000th veteran to Washington, D.C. So that's that's a pretty cool stat as far as I'm concerned. We have two World War II veterans that are on this flight and three Korean War veterans. So, again, the World War II guys and ladies are obviously getting much harder to find. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be 58 and sunny in Washington tomorrow. So I'm a cool weather fan. I will take that any day over 94 and humid in Washington. So it should be a perfect day.
Conversely, because you never know this time of year, it could be a lot worse in terms of the cold and who knows what kind of weather conditions. And the flights do not happen without, obviously, all of the hard work of the folks associated with Flag City Honor Flight, but also without the guardians, without everybody who contributes to help make the flights possible. And we can't say it enough, that support is tremendously needed.
No question. The guardians, the people in Northwest Ohio, and the Findlay area in particular, of course, have been absolutely fabulous for our organization. In terms of guardians, we've got a wait list of guardians, people that want to come and help us on this trip. Usually we get about half of the veterans that have a family guardian that they want to take with them, which is fabulous. But then also about half of them don't have someone. And again, the community really steps up. And we actually just had our guardian training yesterday at the Findlay Masonic Complex. And we have about 2-hour training for them as to, the safety of our veterans and what's going to happen during the day and et cetera. So, that community support is obviously invaluable to us.
And this comes from all over. I mean, again, I think it's important to emphasize that when the Flag City Honor Flight organization first started, there were a lot of Honor Flight chapters around the region, Northwest Ohio, Ohio in general. Now, many of those have ceased operations, and you're still here, meaning you're getting a lot of veterans from outside the immediate Findlay-Hancock County area who you are taking on these trips as well.
Exactly, Chris. Yeah, when Flag City Honor Flight was formed, there was a Northwest Ohio Honor Flight in Toledo that was in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And three or four years after Flag City Honor Flight was formed, that entity dissolved. And so Flag City Honor Flight assumed all of the Northwest Ohio territory. So we go to the Indiana line, to the Michigan line, all the way over to Put-in Bay area, down to South Olima. So we've got a big area of people. Now, that area just basically means we typically don't fundraise outside of that area because we're infringing on other people's fundraising abilities for their honor flights.
Yeah.
But we will take veterans from anywhere in the country. So, we get a lot of them from Southeast Michigan just because Toledo's, so much easier for them. Mm-hmm. But we've had veterans from Alaska, come to fly with us because their family's here and they want to fly with them, which is fabulous.
Yeah. So how do folks support? And again, this is so apropos that we're talking about this on Veterans Day. And this really is all about the veterans, all about those who have served, to take them to D.C. to see the memorials in their honor, the appreciation of a grateful nation. How do we continue to support the mission?
Well, again, we are a nonprofit organization. Nobody's paid. We get no government funding, so it's all corporate and community support. So obviously, any donations that people can make, they can go right to flagcityhonorflight.org and donate right on there. But then the other way is to come up here for the Welcome Home celebration. If you've never been to one, I highly encourage you to come up to it. I always say it's patriotism at its best. There's, usually 800 to 1,000 people that are at the Grand Air Hangar, when they come in the evening. And it's just a really neat occasion as they get off that plane and walk through. The band's playing. People are waving flags. Grandkids have signs for their grandparents. It's just a really neat occasion. And it's a very emotional occasion for a lot of the veterans.
Yeah.
So That's certainly another way you can support this organization.
And for those who would like to participate in that aspect of it, what time should folks plan to be there tomorrow evening? When's the flight re-arrive at Toledo?
Sure. We fly into Toledo Express Airport, but we're at the Grand Air Hangar. Mm-hmm. If you come, you would just come and park on the east side in the grass lot. There's people there directing you in.
Okay.
The doors open at 7 o'clock, and there's some things going on there, but the flight isn't scheduled to arrive until about 9.
Okay.
And usually, it runs a little behind, and then it takes about a half hour to get them off the plane because there's so many that are in wheelchairs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we don't open the hangar gate until they are all off of the plane and ready to walk through. So, again, it opens at 7. We won't be home till 9, and by the time they're off the plane, 9:15, 9:30-ish time frame. So just to give you a sense.
It is a terrific event all the way around and something that everybody can participate in to welcome them home tomorrow, the final Flag City Honor Flight mission of the year. As we mentioned, planning for 2025 now underway, and we have a link on our webpage for more information from the folks at Flag City Honor Flight. President Steve Schult with us this morning. Once again, thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Happy Veterans Day to everybody.
So with today being Veterans Day, and given that the holiday season is right around the corner now, 17 days until Thanksgiving as of today. Wow, 17 days. In any event, the Library of Congress wants to make this the season to preserve the firsthand history of those who have served among your family, loved ones. We were talking about this on Friday, but in case you missed it, it bears repeating on this Veterans Day. We spoke with Monica Mahindra. She is director of the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. What is the Veterans History Project? And kind of expand on that question of why this emphasis on engaging volunteers and veterans this season.
Well, it's really a multitude of things. The Veterans History Project, though, first and foremost, is your listeners' opportunity to participate, engage with, and encounter history. And by that, I mean it is designed by Congress for individuals across the country to interview and gather the first-person narrative of the veterans in their lives, in their communities, those who served. The U.S. veterans who served from World War I through the more recent conflicts. When you use those archival principles that we offer through our practice and on our website, you then become part of what is the other part of the Veterans History Project, which it is a huge national collective archive of first-person remembrances, 120,000 voices strong and growing. And we're headed into the holiday season. We think of Veterans Day as the kickoff for Veterans Season because it's such a great opportunity for anyone to reach out to the veteran in their life, taking some time over the holidays to sit down and gather their story to ensure that it's part of this national collective effort.
As director of this project, nobody knows better than you the impact of this.
I have to say, I am in this luxurious position. The project is nearly 25 years old. It will turn so next year. And we just cannot stop encountering what are the benefits of this project. When it was started, yeah, People talked about it as if it were a living legacy because you were talking to living veterans. But now we know, like you say, with these hundreds of thousands of collections and this corpus, this body that people can interact with every day through the website, come to our reading room at the Library of Congress, it is already contributing to hundreds of books. It's contributing to studies of mental health and medical health. It's contributing to choreography. So yes, it is a huge benefit.
It really is a part of the historical record. I mean, so much has been written and documented from a historical standpoint on virtually every global conflict, but this really adds something to the historical record that you just don't get elsewhere.
It truly does enliven it. It enriches it. when you're looking at a historical record, typically you're hearing it from a historian's point of view, the military's point of view. It's often top down. This is every participant. So whether it's combat, whether it's logistics, whether it's in the kitchen, whether it's sitting in a computer bank in Nevada for a current conflict issue, all of these moments that these individuals are having, we're seeing the unmediated hearing, the raw of their experience as they witness history and connect us to it.
So, again, there's this emphasis to really add more stories to the collection as we get into the holiday season, as we were saying. How do veterans and volunteers who would like to participate get involved, and who is eligible, I guess, or who are you looking for in particular to submit their history to this project?
Everyone can participate, 16 and older. By doing this voluntary act of service, it's not volunteer with a title and quotes around it. You can do it. We're recruiting the stories of U.S. veterans who served from World War I through the more recent conflict. So that could be working with your family to gather the letters and photographs that are in the hall closet of a World War I family member. It can be going out the door and talking to someone you've never considered might be a veteran before and asking them about their service and whether they've served, and then asking to conduct an interview with them. It is really as simple as using that recording device in your pocket, going to our website, talking to people, and making it happen. So World War I to current conflict veterans, those are the stories we're recruiting, but anyone 16 and above is a witness to history and then becomes part of history by participating in the project.
And then, as you mentioned, all of this is available through the Library of Congress. If you can't go to the library itself and see the firsthand, you also have these stories online, right?
120,000 plus records of individual first person experience. Over 70% of those records contain some digitized material that lets you get to the heart of the matter, hear and see directly from those veterans, and growing, I might add. We're constantly digitizing, constantly adding to these collections. So you have a direct conduit to hear directly from the veteran for what she saw. What was it like for her? How did he feel when he was trying to connect with family members, from somewhere in Vietnam? Did he do it with an audio recording? Did he do it with a letter? You're hearing directly from them through the website, loc.gov/vet.
Part of our conversation on Friday with Monica Mahindra, director of the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. On this Veterans Day, more about their effort to add more veteran stories to their compilation of the Veterans History Project at the library. If you want to get more information, we've got that link that she mentioned posted at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net, scroll down to Friday's program, and you'll find the link there. If you want to hear our complete conversation with Monica Mahindra about the Veterans History Project, check out the Good Mornings podcast edition. Stream it directly from the website. You can listen on demand on the WFIN app, which is free to download from the App Store or Google Play. You can also subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Well, did you know the Old Farmer's Almanac is the oldest continuously published periodical in North America, issued annually since 1792, making the 2025 edition the 233rd year. And the thing that they are most famous for, of course, are their annual weather forecasts. So joining us this morning is Editor-in-Chief Carol Conair, who is actually, and this is pretty cool, only the 14th editor in the 233-year history of the almanac. So, I mean, if you think about it, Carol, it the Almanac's been around as long, almost as long as the U.S. has been an independent nation, and yet there are far fewer people who have held the title of editor-in-chief of the Old Farmer's Almanac than have held the title of president of the United States. So that's pretty exclusive club you're in there.
It's not bad. Not bad company to keep. I agree.
And there you go.
If you do the math, the average stint of an editor then would be 18 years, though.
Wow.
Our founder, Robert B. Thomas, was at the helm for 50, so he kind of set things
kind of skewed
in
the
motion.
Numbers there. Yeah. So has this always been kind of the bread and butter feature of the Old Farmer's Almanac, these weather forecasts?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, back in the day, you know, every other person then was a grower, and they needed any leg up, right? That's why people want to garden by the moon. You know, they want to know if there's anything that they can tell in ahead of time to prepare, you mm-hmm. know? So, but yes, but it really connects people who are interested in all outdoor activities, whether that's,
well,
you
sure.
know, sporting things or night sky watching or gardening, you know, whether you're traveling or a driver, you know, all those things, they really matter to
yeah.
people that spend time in weather, in places where weather makes a difference.
Yeah, it is the one thing that we all have in common, is they all care about this. And what is the method of creating these uniquely long-term forecasts? I mean, how much of the way it is done is the same, and how much of it is different than 2.5 centuries ago?
Well, you'll be surprised to know that we honestly use the same formula that we used way back when. Robert B. Thomas was an astronomer, and so he factored in what are the magnetic storms on the sun. They come in 11-year cycles. We're just about at the peak of 25. You know, lots of people seeing that aurora borealis further south. That's magnetic storms on the sun causing that.
Okay.
But what we know is we have so much data, 25 cycles of 11 years, and that's what we look at. Our numbers really crunch. Now, of course, like, you can do that by supercomputer, but
yeah.
Back in the day, it was by hand.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, obviously, you have much more data, much more science that is known, but the basic formula is pretty much the same as it has always been.
Yes, looking at those patterns of magnetic storms, of sun science, and applying those to, you know, climate science and meteorology, our traditional weather forecasting tools, you know, and then there's lots of other factors, like what is the warm, you know, a slightly warmer Gulf of Mexico going to do? You know, what's the polar vortex look like? It's a weak La Nina. So all those factors come into our long range forecast.
And how long does it take to do all of that research and come up with the forecast? And when do you start working on this?
Well, we work with our own weather team at AccuWeather. They use our formulas, and they're really working all year long. You know, we're looking at how our forecasts are doing, but their work, so we're working hard on the 2026 edition now, but we won't see the forecasts for, you know, it'll go out next fall, 2025.
Okay.
And we'll really be working on those forecasts as the last thing that goes in. So we print in June, so, you know, next spring is when we are really working hard on those forecasts.
So already, as we were mentioning a little bit earlier, already parts of the western U.S. have had their first big snowstorm. How long before, this is what everyone wants to know, how long before the wintry weather gets to us in northwest Ohio?
Well, we are actually, for your area, calling that snowfall and precipitation will be below normal this winter, but that you're most, I know. And, you know, again, like, we're talking about things that I'm looking at are that, like, there are going to be periods of heavy snow and then not a lot of activity. And that's that polar vortex, that wavy polar vortex.
Okay.
So your cold snaps that we're seeing will be early December and then late February into early March.
Okay.
So looking for snow in those times. But we're saying that you could really have the most snow in late December, then late January into early February, and then with that last cold snap, that late February into early March.
So a relatively mild winter, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're not going to see any snow. It's
exactly.
just concentrated in those times. And I think that actually kind of goes almost against what many people are sort of thinking. I mean, the past couple of winters have been rather mild, and it seems like we might be due for a bad one. Plus, it just seems like this year has been a year of extremes, so the gut instinct would be that maybe we're about due for a bad winter, but you say no.
Yeah, that's not what we're predicting. I think, you know, it's a lot because of that, the weak La Nina. You know, again, I think you're going to see storms. That's what we're predicting, but that they're not going to be these whoppers and you're not going to be stuck under snow cover for 2 months.
Yeah, well, that's certainly good. We'll take that. It is more than just the winter forecast, too. You forecast like the entire year ahead, right?
We do. We're calling in your area for a warm spring.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. For those who are hearing you talk about the winter and that late period where we might get it, by that time, we're all going to be ready for, you know, spring to pop and all of that. So give us something to look forward to. What do we see on the other side of those winter months?
Absolutely. So it's going to come. Spring's going to come warmer than normal and drier than normal to the west, which you're in the western part of what we call the Lower Lakes region.
Uh-huh.
And then more precipitation than normal the further east you go. But I think the good news is that summer, yes, warmer than normal, but rainfall above normal. I think, you know, a lot of people that want to be outside, you know, when it's too dry, that's not good for everything.
Well, and for the growers, especially for the farmers who rely on the weather, it was certainly very dry this past year and through much of the summer growing season. And by the way, we should point out that the almanac is so much more than just the weather outlook. Like we said, it may be what you are most famous for, but there's a lot of really interesting reading in the pages of the almanac beyond that.
Absolutely. This year we have all kinds of stories, you know, things that we have categories from astronomy to home remedies to farming and fishing. I think we're one of the very few places that still does folklore. You know, we do food and we always have a recipe contest. We get great recipes from all over North America. And, you know, so I think and really the astronomy is one of the things that people come to us. You know, you can go to, you know, some .gov site, but what we're really telling you is when and where to look in your area, and people really love that as well.
The 2025 edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac is out now, and you can also find a lot of the information from the almanac online, too.
Yeah, for growers especially and weather nuts like myself, you can plug in your zip code and you can get long-range forecasts. You can get your planting dates, your frost dates, things like that. Just really cool tools for people that are always outside.
Again, Old Farmer's Almanac Editor-in-Chief Carol Kinnear with us this morning. Carol, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Here's a little helpful advice for your Monday morning, really any Monday morning. If you are going to call out sick to work, make sure that you don't go out in public where you might be seen. If you're going to play hooky, make sure that you keep a low profile, right? A man in Los Angeles says he has been fired from his job. He posted about this online, and it's gone viral. He's been fired from his job after he called out sick so that he could attend the L.A. Dodgers championship celebration. The World Series championship parade and celebration. The man says he was given a letter of termination that stated he had been seen at the Dodgers World Series victory parade, which never mind how unlucky that is that there were, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people, and he should happen to have been on camera and his boss happened to see it. But if you're going to call out sick, probably keep a low profile. Just stay home and watch it on TV. You know, the now former employee is accusing his boss of being a Yankees fan, and that is the reason for his termination. I don't know if he's planning on suing, or I don't have his name. I don't know what job he had. I don't know if there's pending legal action involved here, but just not a particularly bright thing to do. You know what I mean? That's elsewhere in the broken news, the story of Mitchell Brotherson. This is a crazy story. Mitchell Brotherson. Mitchell was dumped by his girlfriend, Jenna, and then he went on a ski trip where he suffered a concussion. He had an accident, suffered a concussion. When he woke up at the hospital, he had no memory of his girlfriend breaking up with him. Jenna said, "I was so confused as to why he kept messaging me because we had broken up. I dumped him." But he apparently didn't remember that he had been dumped. And when he woke up in the hospital, he was texting Jenna, who he thought was still his girlfriend. I was so confused. But this is where the story takes a twist. Mitchell was so kind post-breakup when Jenna when Jenna told him, "Hey, we're broken up." He was so kind that Jenna decided to give him a second chance. "I was nervous to swallow my pride and ask if he would date again, and that's when I realized he had no clue we had ever broken up." 7 months later, fast forward, 7 months later, Mitchell and Jenna are now married. "When people ask us about our love story, it's our favorite part to tell. We really felt invisible strings pulling us together all along." I wouldn't recommend, if you have a breakup with your girlfriend, if you have a difficult breakup, to go on a ski trip and get into an accident where you lose your memory. But in this case, it worked out okay. Two appear to be very happily married. Wow, crazy story. Elsewhere in the broken news, this from the International File, where an Australian man got a double dose of creepiness when he went to use the toilet in his house, went to use the bathroom, and found a python coiled up inside. A python in his toilet. And it happened not once, but twice in the same week. Snake handler Drew Godfrey tells Newsweek, "The first python was a female that was likely in there to soak its skin before shedding. The second was a male, most likely looking for the female, as that was the last place she would have left her scent trail." I never really thought about that. Something to keep in mind if you ever find a python in your toilet bowl. There may be another python come looking for it. Yikes. Mr. Godfrey says it's all part of living down under. He said, "We've actually had to remove pythons from toilets several times before. Getting snakes out of the loo is not unusual, but thankfully also not that common. It's something," he says, "we have to do once or twice a year." One more reason not to live in Australia. My goodness. Crazy. Crazy. Everything in Australia is trying to kill you, including pythons in the toilet twice in a week. Sweet story here from the broken news this morning. Out of Minnesota, where a girl recently had her longtime wish come true on her 10th birthday, Eleanor was born at a McDonald's restaurant in Hugo, Minnesota in 2014. And now she has returned to the same restaurant to celebrate her 10th birthday with family and friends. Eleanor's dad, Eric Evanson, says she's always wanted to go back to the McDonald's restaurant where she was born. Eric and his wife, Claire, and his mother-in-law were on the way to a birthday party themselves back in October of 2014 when they stopped at a Mickey D's so that Claire, who was 28 weeks pregnant at the time with Eleanor, she had to use the bathroom. And when she ran to the McDonald's to use the facilities, she spontaneously went into labor, Eric said. She went into the bathroom, sat down, and suddenly Eleanor's legs just popped out. Eric, along with his mother-in-law, Good Samaritans, and a police officer, all rushed in to help deliver Eleanor, who was born 12 weeks early and was diagnosed with a rare genetic condition called 22q11.2 deletion syndrome. It's a chromosomal difference or deficiency. For her 10th birthday party, a few special friends, including two of Eleanor's childhood nurses, came out to celebrate. Eric said Eleanor loved going back to where she was born and added that it was a meaningful event for all of the people who have been part of the family's community over the years to be there too. He also said it was an unexpected chance to complete the story for some McDonald's employees who were part of both Eleanor's birth and now her 10th birthday. That's very sweet. That's very sweet. Some of the employees were still there. That's kind of cool too. And lastly, broken news this morning. You know, the new Wicked movie is coming out here in about a week and a half. And Mattel has a marketing agreement. They have dolls depicting characters from the new movie musical. But the rollout of the Wicked action figures, or dolls, action figures, whatever you want to call them, the rollout of these characters from the musical Wicked got off to a wickedly bad start. Specifically, the one for Glinda and Elphaba, the characters of Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo. So Mattel's website to purchase toys is based on Mattel's website to purchase other toys based on the movie is wickedmovie.com. But on the packaging of the dolls for Glinda and Elphaba, is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, the packaging on the toys listed the website as wicked.com. Wicked.com has nothing to do with the movie. It is not a website that you would want your children to go to. Let's just put it that way. It is not a site that you want your kids to go to, wicked.com. That's what was printed on the packages. In a statement, Mattel says, "We deeply regret this unfortunate error and are taking immediate action to remedy this. Parents are advised that the misprinted, incorrect website is not appropriate for children." Consumers who have already purchased the product are advised to discard the packaging or obscure the link and may contact Mattel customer service for further information. As of Sunday, the entire Wicked doll collection has been pulled from toy store shelves while they reprint the packaging. Although I'm thinking that somewhere, some collector is scooping these up just as fast as they can get them. You know what I mean? Somebody is scooping these up. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Findlay's Andy Ritz on Becoming a Findlay Rotarian.
After 35 years working as a pediatrician in Findlay, I wanted to give back to the community, but not at my job, but as a service that would reach many people. The best way to do this was for me to join Findlay Rotary, and that's what I did in February of 2022.
To become part of an organization that brings together business, professional leaders to provide community service and advance goodwill, contact Findlay Rotary at findlayrotary.org and click on Join.
This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We were mentioning a little bit earlier, 17 days until Thanksgiving now. You're counting it down, 17 days until Thanksgiving. And if you are traveling, you may be wondering, especially if you're not a frequent traveler. I mean, if you're flying someplace for Thanksgiving or making Christmas travel plans and you are not necessarily a frequent traveler, you may be wondering, how likely is it that we will encounter some of the common travel issues that we often hear about? According to a new survey of 2,000 Americans, only 28% of those who have traveled in the past year have had to deal with lost luggage. 28%. So it's not entirely uncommon, but not necessarily the most common problem that you will have to deal with. I know a lot of people worry about, what happens if they lose my luggage? 28% of those who have traveled in the past year have had to deal with that. It's much more likely to have a flight delayed or canceled. 46% of travelers say that that has happened to them in the past year. 15% have had their reservations changed without notice. The airline has canceled a flight and moved you to another flight or something like that without notice. So those are the things to keep in mind if you are traveling for the holiday or traveling around the holidays. 50% to save money, 50% of those in the survey say they give up premium seating. It's the most common way to save money on travels. And I thought this was kind of interesting, too, just as a sidebar on this. When they travel, 37% of couples say they sleep in different beds. And half say that they set an alarm when they're on vacation in the morning. Half of them, half don't. But who are these 50% of travelers that say that they still set an alarm on vacation? No. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're on vacation. Don't set an alarm. What's wrong with you? Well, of course, as we get older, our bodies tend to change, and some of the most obvious signs of that change show up on our face. The fine lines, the wrinkles, these are changes that we may not always be ready for or are particularly welcome, to say the least. So joining us this morning is Dr. Rolanda Wilkerson with findings from a new study on skin evolution and aging, as well as advice to prevent and reverse the signs of aging. Dr. Wilkerson, this is a story as old as time. I mean, call it vanity or whatever. We want to retain that youthful skin and that youthful glow for as long as possible.
Yes, we all do. And interestingly enough, Stanford University just released a study that shows that we age in rapid bursts around 44 in our 60s. And that impacts that youthful glow that we want to maintain. So at Olay, though, we are experts in skin biology. And in our groundbreaking multi-decade and ethnicity study, we actually found that our skin ages in what's called tipping points during every single decade.
So, and again, let me emphasize this, underscore what you were saying. This is a multi-decade study. And you looked at various ethnicities. Obviously, different ethnicities will you'll see different point data points that show up, I'm assuming.
Indeed, and I'll share exactly what we found during the study. Olay analyzed over 20,000 unique genes across ethnicities and decades, and found that our skin shows a decline in skin's ability to fight free radicals as early as our 20s. There's a decline in skin energy that impacts skin cellular turnover in our 30s. There's an increase in something called cellular senescence, leading to sagging and skin thinning in our 40s. Then in our 50s, there's a decline in the skin barrier function. And all of this is actually accelerated when we hit our 60s.
So you also find, I understand from the notes that I have here, that you find exceptional skin agers. What is that all about?
Yes. In the study, Olay discovered that there's a group of women they deem exceptional agers because their genes were much more active. That prompted us to dig deeper into how we could make everyone's genes more active as well. Researchers uncovered a unique gene expression, and that's a distinctive pattern identifying group of people that don the exceptional aging genes. These people look much younger than others in the study.
Okay.
In that same age group, even without having a cosmetic procedure.
So, and I think we all know someone like that who look a lot younger than they are. So I guess that makes sense. You want to take a real long, hard, close look at these individuals and find out what makes them so fortunate in that respect.
That's right. And the thing is, we all carry those same genes. But the group of genes in the women who were exceptional agers were much more active. And so this prompted our researchers to look into what affects those genes, what processes they control, and whether those learnings from the gene fingerprint could be applied to advancing personalized skincare technologies. And we actually utilize those findings to be able to do so.
So what kinds of, I guess, ingredients, for lack of a better term, I guess you would call them ingredients, what are the things that can help slow down that aging process then?
Sure. So we took those findings about the skin tipping points at each decade and used the insights to help inform active ingredients and active ingredient combinations that will actually prevent and even reverse the signs of aging in our skin. Those ingredients are niacinamide, and that is an essential nutrient that helps to maintain moisture as well as increase exfoliation. Then there's an amino peptide complex, which helps to decrease the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles, again, signs of aging. And then lastly, there's another ingredient which helps keep the skin hydrated throughout the day, and that's glycerin. Each one of those ingredients can be found in Olay's Microsculpting Cream, all in one jar.
Well, that was actually what I was going to ask next, because this sounds very scientific, obviously, and maybe it might seem above people's heads. So explain how you use all of this information to come up with the appropriate skin care for all these different types of individuals.
Yes, we use the insights from the study to really hone in on the right ingredients and then also the right ingredient levels and combinations to formulate in a skincare cream, a moisturizing cream that can be used daily so that a person can fight the signs of aging. And again, those signs of aging could include fine lines, wrinkles, loss of hydration, all to really help fight free radical damage in the skin. I mentioned earlier that that happens as early as the 20s. And then all of the things that I mentioned in the tipping points accelerate in the 60s. So we want to make sure that we're using a product that's been formulated in an optimal way with the right levels and concentrations of the ingredients to really help combat the signs of aging and then combat those things that can happen at every tipping point. And that's Olay Microsculpting Cream.
Now, we mentioned at the outset, you know, maybe this is vanity and a lot of it obviously has to do with that. But are there health benefits here as well to preventing all of these things? For example, the drying, the wrinkling, the aging of the skin?
Yes, our skin is our body's largest organ. And so what we want to do is make sure we take care of it. Things like free radical damage can happen from environmental factors. Environmental factors like the sun, like even our own personal habits that we might choose. Someone asked the question about the impact of smoking. All of that really helps to reverse some of the, accelerate the signs of aging that we see in our skin.
Yeah.
And as it's accelerating the signs of aging, you want to make sure you're combating that with a regular skincare regimen and take care of that largest organ, of which the face, most people see it every single day.
Yeah. Again, Dr. Rolando Wilkerson is principal scientist and senior director at Procter & Gamble. Where do we get more information on all of this research?
Yes, I'm excited to share that you can find this information on Olay.com. And from now through the end of the year, check out Olay's rebate that allows you to earn $10 back when you spend $30 or more on any Olay product. To claim this rebate, visit Olay.com, Olay Rebate, and check out Olay Microsculpting Cream.
This is certainly the time of year when a lot of people become more cognizant of these issues. We'll have a link on our webpage as well. Dr. Wilkerson, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, what is the future of clean energy development under a second Trump administration? We'll take a closer look at new research data on the impact of investments made during the Biden presidency. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.